So, good afternoon. I hope you have enjoyed your lunch. Now we are going to continue with the talks. First one is with Oliver Grissel, and he will be talking about tricks for efficient multi-core computing. Please.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Olivier. I'm a software engineer at INRIA. And I work, among other things, on scikit-learn. But today I'm going to talk about how to use single machine, multiple CPUs on a single machine to do compute-intensive workloads. Is the volume good enough in the back? Yeah. All right. And this work is joint work with Thomas Moreau from CMLA. And ENS. So the slides are online. If this is a bit too small on the screen, you can check it out offline online. So today I'm gonna talk about the concurrent features API from the standard library, and then this API is quite flexible and it allows you to do thread-based or process-based multi-core computing, and we'll discuss the pros and cons of the two options. And some limitation and some extensions that we provide in a third-party library. And finally, I would like also to discuss a bit of thread-based parallelism for array operations using BLAS via NumPy, for instance, and how to better understand the performance profile of those operations. So let's start with embarrassingly parallel computations. So in the standard library, there are two options. The oldest one is the multiprocessing pool class, which is the first implementation of a pool of worker where you can dispatch function calls to be executed in parallel on different cores. And more recently in Python 3, there is a new API which is called concurrent features, which is also part of the standard library. On Python 2, there is an extension package if you want. And it's reusing the under the hood the building blocks of multiprocessing, but it's providing a new front end that is also more stable, and the API is more flexible and nicer. And finally, we'll talk a bit about how to make it even better with using a third party project which we call Loki. So concurrent features. So in concurrent features, we have this notion of future. A future is an object that is a reference to a result for some asynchronous computation that has been dispatched on a worker running on a separate core outside of the main thread of the main program. The future itself can be in four states: not started, running, canceled, or done. And it's a Python object that you can introspect without blocking using the attributes running, canceled, and done. And you can also call a blocking method on that object to fetch the result and to wait for the result. And if the function call has triggered an exception and you call result, you will get the exception directly. But you can also inspect whether or not there is an exception and fetch it this way. So let's see an example. So assume that you want to do heavy computation, like for instance, fitting a machine learning model with some hyperparameters on some data set. So we have this function fit model that is just returning a model, but I assume that it's taking at least several minutes or maybe several hours to complete. What the concurrent feature provides you with is an executor class. So for instance, the thread pool executor class, but you could also import the process pool executor class. And when you use it as a context manager with the with block, as soon as you enter that block, it will create the workers. So it could be threads or it could be process. And when you're under that context, using the executor object, you can submit function calls. So the function fit model has been defined in the main program, but you can submit the execution. So it ships the definition of the function and the argument into some worker. And what you get back as a result in the main program is a future object that you can use to asynchronously control what's happening on the worker. And you can go on and submit additional tasks, for instance, another function call on another worker with different parameters. And in the meantime, you can do other stuff in the main program, like monitoring what's happening, updating the user interface or something like this. And the execution is happening under the hood on those backends, and they could be done or not, and you can fetch the results afterwards. So to fetch the results, you just call result on the future object, and it will transfer back the result of the computation at this point to the main program. And we can do that for the other one as well, which is already done, so we don't have to wait. And as soon as we exit from this context manager with block, it destroys all the workers. So it releases all the system resources that were necessary to do the parallel computation. And you're left with the results of the computation that you fetched previously. So we can select two kinds of worker process. One is thread-based and the other one is process-based. So a thread worker is a real system thread. So under Unix, it's a pthread. On Windows, it's a Windows thread. But all the threads are sharing the same Python interpreter. There is only the main Python interpreter running the main program that is being reused for the other workers. So this has many advantages, such as it's very fast to start and stop a thread. There is little memory overhead, but it's very low just for the thread state itself. But there is no copy of the object that you pass to the functions. And more importantly, that makes it possible to have no communication overhead between the main process and the workers. But then we are using Python object to do that, a shared Python object. And because we are sharing the Python object, we need to make sure that the interpreter state and the object states are not corrupted by concurrent execution. And to do that, the C Python implementation is using a global interpreter lock, which introduces some challenges. In particular, this global interpreter lock is locking every time, is acquired every time you access an attribute or you call into a function of a Python object, a method of a Python object, or you mutate the state of a Python object. So it was not initially designed for efficient multi-core computing, but more for simplicity to make sure that the interpreter is safe when you run on separate thread. However, it can be released, this lock, when you're doing long-running I/O operations. So this is why it's very efficient to use a thread pool to talk to a database or to connect to multiple websites, because you can do other stuff in Python while waiting for the results of a download, for instance. And it can also be released explicitly by some compiled extensions in third-party libraries, for instance, NumPy, Pandas, scikit-learn. Pretty much any library that is written using Cython and that makes it explicit to release the GIL, then it's possible to have Python code that runs in parallel of NumPy in a different thread, for instance, on different cores. So here is a time diagram that is inspired from David Beasley's talks on the GIL. So you can see different Python threads running in parallel. And you see the arrows. This is pure Python code running, and you can see that at any point in time, only the GIL is acquired by one specific thread, and so only that thread can run the Python code, and the others have to wait. Which means that if you do that to run pure Python code, it's not quicker than sequential execution, using one thread to run everything, even if you're on a multi-core machine. However, if you do I/O intensive stuff, like talking to a database, whenever you're talking to the database, you release the GIL so you can call in another thread some Python function. Or if you are calling into some native library that is releasing the GIL, for instance, if you do a large matrix-matrix multiplication in NumPy, the GIL is released during that time, so you can do other stuff in the meantime. The other way to do processing is to use a process worker instead of a thread. In that case, you create a new Python interpreter for this specific worker, and so that the workers are no longer independent, are completely independent of one another. So this has some inconvenience, because starting a new Python process can take some more time, even just the process itself, the system process, but also the interpreter. And there is a higher memory overhead, because the interpreter itself in memory takes some space. And there is also a higher communication overhead because you have to pickle and unpickle the arguments of the function calls and transfer them using system pipes or sockets or systems, local sockets, Unix sockets, and so on. But then you don't have the guild contention issue anymore because the workers are completely independent of one another. And so you can, if your code is embarrassingly parallel, then you can really benefit from all the cores on your machine. However, you have to know that there are two ways to start a new interpreter for a worker. You can, on POSIX at least, POSIX is Unix or macOS, and it could be just fork or a spawn with a fork plus an exec. And if you just use fork, it's an advantage, and it is the default behavior of multiprocessing, because it's a low spanning overhead, it's quite quick to do that. And the interpreter is already warm imported because it already have a copy of all the imported modules that were previously imported in the main program. But then there is some inconvenience because it's not very correct way to do this from a Unix point of view. And so that can trigger crash in third-party multi-threaded programs. For instance, if you have XGBoost, which is based on OpenMP or Spacy or OpenCV, if you use it in the main program and you call a function in parallel using multiprocessing in a sub-program, then the internal thread pool of XGBoost or OpenMP will be inconsistent in the worker, and basically it will crash, it will freeze. And so this is really hard to debug and very confusing for the users. So this is why I would not recommend to use the fork way to start the workers. So the alternative is to use spawn, but then the inconvenience, it's safe, but the inconvenience is that it's slower to start, typically a couple hundred milliseconds if you launch many workers. And you need to re-import the libraries in the workers because those are completely new interpreters. So as a summary, if you use threads, if you really want to do pure Python code in parallel, you can do that with threads. But if you call into NumPy or Pandas or something that release the GIL, that's not necessarily an issue. And then you benefit from the fact that you don't have any communication overhead, it's POSIX safe, and there is a low spanning overhead. However, if you really want to do a pure Python code in parallel, then you're forced to use a process. And then with the fork, you have this POSIX safety issue. You can trigger the crash. And you have the communication overhead of having two processes talking to one another. And the safest alternative would be to use a spawn, but then you have the issue of low spanning overhead. So starting the new process takes more time. So this is why we introduced Loki as a library, which makes it possible to hide this issue by keeping a pool of worker running in the background so that you can reuse this and hide this starting overhead. So basically we want to reuse the process pool executor and to keep it as a global singleton of your Python program. The problem is that you need to make sure that it will never deadlock. And some the default implementation, especially in oldest version of Python, of process pool executor is actually a reason to cry. When you submit something that is not pickable, then you deadlock your program. You have to control C. You cannot catch this exception. It's just written on STDR. But your program is broken, basically. You have to control C and to restart or whatever. And the instance of a process pool executor is unusable at this point. It can be completely corrupted. So in the Loki project, we derive from those base class, but we added some more tests for very weird situations where workers kill one another, or you send unpickable stuff in the results of the execution, to try and trigger all these possible weird scenarios and to detect them and to fix them. And we plan to contribute the fixes to upstream Python, but it won't be available before 3.7 or 3.8. So in the meantime, you can use Loki. And furthermore, with Loki, you can reuse the executor. You can reuse a singleton, a global singleton. So we have this get reusable executor, when you create it, you can see, you can introspect, there is an incremental identifier on that. You can submit code and get some result as with a regular executor. If you later in your code you try to fetch the executor again, it will return exactly the same instance. So it's very cheap, very quick. And then if you submit unsafe stuff, like for instance an argument that is not pickable, then you get an executor that you can catch. It's not a deadlock anymore. And if you try later to refetch the executor, it will build a new executor that is in a working state. So it's very easy to work in a safe manner and a quick manner with this. So finally, the last section of my talk would be to talk a bit more about thread-based parallelism for NumPy-related stuff, like array processing, vector matrices, and so on. So what is BLAS? BLAS is basically the engine behind NumPy, and many array operations implemented in NumPy are actually just wrapper around linear algebra routines that are implemented using a standard API called BLAS. And there are two very efficient implementations that are very popular. One is open source and is called OpenBLAS, and it's used by default by NumPy when you download it, when you download the binary wheels from PyPI, at least under Linux, or if you use the Conda binary packages from ConDaForge on any platform, it's using OpenBLAS. And if you use the Anaconda distribution, it's using another implementation of BLAS, which is even more efficient, but on Intel CPUs, but is proprietary, which is called Intel MKL. So, for instance, if you do a dot of two square matrices or do rectangular arrays, A and B, you will see by default, if you use top or edge top or something like this, that all the CPU cores of your machine will go green, 100% usage in many cases. And this is because under the hood, those library, they do the thread-based parallelism by themselves. It's not even NumPy that does it. It's really the BLAS implementation. And so you can control how many threads are going to be used. It's a bit small, sorry. By setting up environment variable based on your on the implementation of the BLAS that you are using. So you have to know about which one is being used under the hood. And if you set open BLAS num thread equals 2 and then you run your Python code, you can restrict the NumPy operation to a specific number of threads and leave some CPUs for other stuff. And for MKL, you just have a different variable, which is called MKL NumThread. It's exactly the same behavior. So it's interesting to know about this, and it's even more interesting to know about what are the performance behavior of using threads or even process on multi-core machines. And one way to analyze this behavior is to do what we call a roofline analysis. So what can make your process, what can limit the performance of your process is the hardware. It could be either the compute capabilities of your CPU. So you have a maximum CPU speed that really depends on the CPU themselves. For instance, 100 gigaflops per second on a multi-core machine, a modern-day multi-core machine, could be even higher than that. So a flop is a floating point operation, like adding two elements in an array or multiplying two elements in an array, and so on. But also accessing data from the RAM to do computation on it is limited, and you typically have a bandwidth limit of, let's say, 50 gigabytes per second on a big machine. And to know whether this is the RAM that limits or the CPU can be tricky. And one way to know is to compute the arithmetic intensity of your workloads, which is the ratio between floating point operation that you want to do, compute, divided by the number of bytes that you need to transfer over the RAM to do the actual computation. So if we take the example of matrix multiplication with two matrices of dimension nk and km, the number of floating point operation that you need to do is a cubic quantity. So the multiplication of all the dimensions, there are three dimensions, and for the data transfer, is actually the size of the two input matrices plus the size of the output matrix. And so this is a quadratic quantity with respect to the dimension. So depending on the dimensions, you can have a linear arithmetic intensity. And there is a particular case where n is equal to 1, for instance, then you have the ratio of two quadratic quantity, which is a constant. In that case, it's 1/4 or something. So it's always fixed and very low. So let's have a look at a plot, a benchmark of the arithmetic intensity versus on the x-axis versus the performance, the speed of computation in gigaflops per second on the y-axis. And this is a bunch of matrix-matrix multiplications for different dimensions using NumPy and MKL. And you see the blue dots, they are using MKL numthread equal 1, so I limit the number of threads available. And the orange dots are with two threads. This is on this laptop, so there is only two physical cores. So, and the axes are in logarithmic scale, and so you can see that the maximum orange performance is around 40 gigaflops, whereas the maximum blue performance is around 21 gigaflops. So it's approximately a scale-up by a factor of 2, which is what is expected. We are really benefiting from the cores if we have a large arithmetic intensity. But if we have a low arithmetic intensity, for instance, if we do a vector matrix multiplication, then we are on the left-hand side of that plot, you can see that then we are limited by those slopes. This is the memory bandwidth, the communication to the memory that is limiting the computation. And we cannot really benefit from the high-end CPU that we have, because just talking to the memory is limiting the computation. And so I don't know exactly the theoretical limits from that machine, but you can see that it's around, on my Mac, it's around 25 gigabytes per second. So if your compute is very simple, you can compute the arithmetic intensity of your program. And then you can, based on this kind of benchmark, you can see whether or not you're limited by the memory or by the CPU. And I did the same using OpenBLAS. And you can see that the peak performance is approximately the same as MKL. However, OpenBLAS compared to MKL for low arithmetic intensive workload is less efficient. So this is MKL, this is OpenBLAS. So when people say that MKL is 10 times faster than OpenBLAS, it's completely wrong if you are on the right-hand side, but it could be significant. OpenBLAS can be significantly slower if you're working with small matrices and you're doing matrix-matrix operations. But in general, it's quite competitive. And I also ran the same on a larger machine with, so blue is 1 core, orange is 5 cores, 5 physical cores, and green is 10 physical thread, 10 thread on 10 physical core. And you can see that the scale up on the right hand side is perfect. We go from 10 to 50 to 100 gigaflop per second. But on the right hand side, on the left hand side, the memory bandwidth is limited. And if I compute the speed up of 5/1 and 10/1, so this is the speed up on the, y-axis this time, you can see that for low arithmetic intensive workloads, the speed up, the maximum speed up that we observe is 4 instead of 10 or instead of 5. Whereas if you go on the right hand side, it can go close to 10 or close to 5. But so it means that the scalability of your code is for low arithmetic intensive stuff is really limited by the memory bandwidth first. And you really cannot benefit from a multi-core in that case. So depending on what you do, sometimes you cannot even use your CPU even with a very optimized implementation. So you have to be very aware of that. So multi-core scalability can be limited by I/O with the RAM for low arithmetic intensive stuff. So a bit of conclusion now. So the thread-based mechanism to do multi-core computation can be very efficient if the critical sections of the performance critical sections of your code are in compiled extensions that release the GIL. And usually this method has the lowest overhead, and you should definitely start with this and benchmark what kind of speed up you get. If you don't get a good speed up, Then you can decide to try, process-based mechanisms, but I would start with thread first. And if you are using array operation, make sure that just the built-in mechanism from NumPy using Blast is not already the best way to do it. Most often, it's going to be the best way to do it, and there is no point in trying to doing parallelism on top of that. Furthermore, if you want to do process-based parallelism, then you should definitely check out Loki to make sure that you have a safe way to do it and you won't crash XGBoost or Spacy or OpenMP code, or at least be aware that this problem exists. And finally, Loki is going to be integrated in JobLib, which is another API, a simpler API to do embarrassingly parallel computation. And it's at some point going to be part of a scikit-learn training models in parallel in a safe way. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, thank you for the very great presentation. We have a couple of minutes for the questions.
Thanks. This was a great presentation. I want to ask about Loki's executor manager. So you said that the processes are staying alive. Mm-hmm. My question is like, can you and when are you deciding to actually drop the worker processes? Because at some point you have to do this, right?
Yeah, I made a simplification. We keep them alive for like 10 seconds or 30 seconds by default. And then they will automatically stop by themselves if they have nothing to do. So that if you call parallel, sequential very quickly, you don't pay for the spawning of a head. But if you just do parallel and then sequential for a long time and then parallel again, then you restart, but it's not a problem because you don't do it very often.
And does the user have more control on like killing the threads?
Yeah, you have keyword arguments if you want to set the worker timeouts. But usually there is no point in tweaking this, like keeping the default should be fine.
Hi, thanks for the nice talk. Do you have any experience with MKL on AMD processors? And if so, can you comment on speed?
I haven't run the benchmark, but I know that OpenBlast has many specialized kernels for AMD, and the OpenBlast developers, they follow the newest generation of the chips, even though the very latest are not yet implemented, but usually it's quite good. MKL, I don't know. It's probably reasonable, but Intel has no incentive to make AMD chip work faster.
Any other question? No. Thank you so much.